I'm Kristen Press.
And I'm Tobin Heath.
We're World Cup winners, Olympians, and the hosts of The Recap Show.
Every week, we sit down with the icons, disruptors, and game changers on the field and beyond it to talk victories, heartbreaks, and everything in between.
We've built a space where athletes, changemakers, and people creating the future of women's sports can show up and show off as their full, unapologetic selves.
Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
Now it's time for Inside the Clubhouse, a show dedicated to the Chicago baseball fan, featuring the best Chicago baseball conversation, as well as the big MLB topics, starring Score baseball insider Bruce Levine and half of Chicago's number one sports morning show, David Haw. It all starts now on Sports Radio 104.3 The Score, and always live on the free Odyssey.
Good Saturday morning, Chicago. Welcome back inside the clubhouse right here on 104.3 The Score and your free Odyssey app, broadcasting live from the Hyundai Score Studios. I am David Haw, along with Bruce Levine, who is in Arizona, talking baseball 9 to 11 like we do almost every Saturday morning. Today, on this Valentine's Day, getting to the heart of the matter for the Cubs and the White Sox out at spring training. Good morning, Bruce. How are we this morning?
That was punny. That was very punny. Happy Valentine's Day to you and to all of our listeners today.
Yes.
And it's always good to have a heart. And I always think of the heart fund this time of year and giving and helping people out. So it's a good day.
It's a good day, Bruce. We're going to have a lot of fun. We have a great show ahead for all of our baseball listeners who on this really nice Saturday morning in Chicago, and I know it's pleasant in the desert as well, are treated to 9:30. We're going to talk to Jonathan Cannon, the White Sox right-hander. 10 o'clock, Justin Steele, catch up with the Cubs lefty to find out where he is in his recovery and return to the Cubs at some point this season. And certainly, it's been a busy week already. There's a lot going on at both camps. You have been all over the place out in Arizona, Bruce. We could start a lot of different ways, but let's start with the news overnight, in case people missed it. It pertains to the Cubs. Zach Gallen, the right-hander the Cubs were negotiating with or pursuing, signs 1 year, $22 million contract to return to the Diamondbacks. How does that affect the Cubs? What was your reaction?
Well, I think it boiled down to the fact that you have to give up a draft pick for him. And the only team in baseball that didn't have to give up a draft pick was his own team, the Arizona Diamondbacks, and they signed him. So, he got just, what he would have got for the qualifying offer from them for a one-year deal. He'll, try to go out and have a great year and go back on the marketplace a year older next year, because this year it didn't pan out the way that he and Scott Boras, the agent, thought. So he's going to get a decent amount of money this year. But, with the Cubs, the conversations were mostly about longer-term deals. The Cubs were not going to be interested in Gallen for a one-year deal. They're not giving up a top draft pick for a one-year deal for a pitcher. So it was going to be a three-year or more deal with at least 2 years that were going to be under contract without him being able to walk away. It was finally decided by Boras and Gallen to move in right now and just take the one-year offer. I don't know if they were afraid they weren't going to get more, but as pitchers continue to go down, as we saw in Atlanta with them losing one of their top pitchers this week for the season, it was a game of chicken that Gallen just didn't want to play.
312-644-6767. What do you think about the Cubs missing out on Zach Gallen? Or maybe you have a thought about the White Sox out in Glendale, Arizona. They've had a week of watching Munetaka Murakami take batting practice, and there have been a lot of results from that have made people stand up and take notice. We're going to talk about the Sox. We're going to talk about the Cubs, and we're going to talk to you out there in the audience. Bruce, back to Gallen. I always felt like, as we discussed this throughout the week on the Mullinghaw Show and enjoyed your reports from Arizona and throughout the offseason about this possibility, they wanted him I don't think they needed him. I think that they are in a position where that would have been a luxury they could afford and were willing to pay. But you look at their rotation, and it's not hard to find, when Justin Steele returns, six quality starters. And on Friday, I think Jackson Wiggins gave them a glimpse of the future when he pitched some live batting practice, or he got on the mound and showed the Cubs more about the future than the present. But how bad does this hurt the Cubs, if it does at all, in your view?
Well, presently, today, sitting here, you know, on February 14th in spring training, not at all. Going into the season, and you see what the pitching depth really is at that point. Are there injuries that occur in spring training? Are there failures with some of the pitchers that they're counting on? I mean, I think you're right, David. They're in a good position. But Gallen is, you know, probably, you know, one of the top 15 pitchers in baseball. So with that in mind, and an innings load of 180 plus for 3 years in a row, those things you don't ignore when you have Tyone, Imanaga, and Boyd mostly coming off next year as free agents. And the reality of you signing them back is not always that good. So, you know, what you have is you have a younger core with Cabrera, you know, certainly a guy that you worry about pitching enough innings. And you have Cade Horton, who threw 140 innings last year, but is still building in that. So the reliability factor is what you're concerned with innings-wise when you're going forward after this year. You and I and everybody that watches baseball are only concerned about 2026. General managers, front office people, owners, they look at 2027, 28, 29, you know, of course, the infamous, you know, quote from Carter Hawkins last year about we're concerned about 2034. You know, that shook some people up. But the reality is that's how general managers think. And you have to be prepared after this year. And you know, from the injuries we saw last year with the Cubs pitching staff, that guys are going to go down.
To your point, and I think this was part of the explanation for this news of the week earlier, when they signed Shelby Miller. Shelby Miller is somebody that I feel like it's insurance for 2027, a look ahead, because, Bruce, what was behind that, and how healthy, or where is he on his road to recovery?
Well, he had Tommy John toward the end of last year, and that is going to probably prevent him from pitching this year, right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, he could come back late, very late in the year. It's doubtful. But this is a signing, as you pointed out, David, for next year. And it's a big arm. Miller had a fantastic year last year. Even at 35, still has a tremendous fastball, good breaking ball, with the Cubs briefly in 2021 before, has bounced around with Arizona twice, Milwaukee toward the end of last year after Arizona. So he's an accomplished bullpen guy. If you look deeply into what bullpens are made out of these days, they're very young guys who throw 100 miles an hour, and then there's the veteran guys that have survived and are somewhere between 33 and 40 years of age that still know how to get people out. And he falls into that area for the Cubs next year.
So Miller's in, Gallen's out, Jackson Wiggins takes the mound and open some eyes to just how good he might be. It's his first spring training with the major league team. He was a non-roster invitee. He could definitely make an impression. But Bruce, the real buzz Friday at Arizona, at least in Mesa at Cubs camp where you are right now, what was Charles Barkley doing in a Cubs hat at spring training in a green sweatsuit? But then he was in Craig Counsell's office, and he was making the rounds with Rick Sutcliffe and Fergie Jenkins. Was that Charles Barkley? I thought the NBA All-Star Game was in L.A.
Charles has always been a great baseball fan, and he and Rick Sutcliffe are very, very close. So Sutcliffe was the one who got him to come here, and he was giving him the Cooks tour of spring training, including Charles, who knows Council from having the time he played here. You know, they were playing at similar times here during their career. And they spent some time in his office just having fun and, you know, kicking it around. Charles Barkley is one of the nicer people beyond the huge personality that you're going to meet. He's just he's an easygoing guy. When I covered him, David, back in his career, you go to his locker and he'd look at my credential and he'd go, is that Levine or Levine? And he'd go, you know, he said, don't they call it Levine on the East Coast? Do you call it Levine? So, I mean, he was always, a fascinating guy who took interest in people and kind of disarmed them by asking them as many questions as you asked him.
We'll hear some audio from Craig Council talking about that visit later in the program. But that's great to see, because obviously it just reinforces this idea that Rick Sutcliffe knows everybody. He just knows everybody, yeah. Friends with everybody.
The one thing that stood out, David, they're on the field talking to some players, and, you know, Rick Sutcliffe goes 6'5", right, 6'6". And there's Charles, and he looks like he's a head taller than Sut. So, I mean, they always said Charles was like 6'7", right? Mm-hmm. But he appeared taller. So either there's some shrinking going on with Sut, or maybe Charles has grown an inch or two over the years. Anyways, it was fun. All the players seemed to enjoy him being around. And, you know, like Charles, he talked to everybody.
It's a great atmosphere right now at Cubs camp. Expectations are high. Moods are good. And I think you see that reflected in the way that we heard from Alex Bregman yesterday, the newest Cub, and he has a new best friend. Bruce, this week we have heard from Pete Crow Armstrong and how the arrival of Alex Bregman to the Cubs is going to help him with his pitch selection, or not his pitch selection, his swing choices, and all the things of being a more disciplined player. And then Alex Bregman, we heard from him talking about what it means to be a new teammate with PCA. They have this Brofest going on already. This is just a glimpse of a little sampling of what it was like to hear Bregman talk about PCA, and then PCA talking about his new best buddy.
Mark DeRosa. He said when he first saw PCA from distance, he had one impression and got to see him up close a little different. Do you feel the same way? He's kind of an emotional player. What have your conversations been like? How's it different now getting to know him a little bit?
I think the sky's the limit for him. I feel like he can do anything on a baseball field, running the bases defensively, offensively. And I feel like the more that he refines his game, he's just going to continue to get better and better and better. And for me, it's once you get older and you play in this league for a while, you start to learn and grow and know what works and know what doesn't from the mental side of things. And I feel like he's going to have an unbelievable year, and he's focused on all the right things.
Yeah, that's my bestie. Breggy's awesome too. I'm really excited to spend some serious time with him. Guy is super enthusiastic about the intricacies of the game, and I've loved hearing him share his experiences in the past, and I think he's going to make me and the whole squad just a whole lot better. It'll be nice having him at third every day.
Bruce, how would you describe the Bregman effect so far?
Shocking to almost everybody there. They all had heard what a great teammate he was and how intricate he goes into watching baseball games and sharing with his teammates. But none of them, I'll give you an example. And I talked about this on the Mully and Haw show. You're aware of that show, aren't you,
David?
Yeah.
Pretty good. Not bad.
This week. No, it's a really good show. Yeah,
has its
you
moments.
Should listen once in a while. But
try.
But when I asked Hobie Milner, who's a new relief pitcher, about his impressions of Bregman. He told me, he said that at the Cub convention, Bregman came up to him and said, "We had two leaks on you in your delivery where we could pick up what you were throwing. And here's one and here's the other." And Milner said, "Wow." He said, I recognize that I was tipping, you know, and that's the great word at spring training right now, talking about teams that are picking up tipping and teams that are cheating, picking that up with coaches having to stay in the coaches' boxes now because Major League Baseball is worried about cheating. But as I digress, Milner said, "I didn't know about the other one I had picked up." And that just shows you what a baseball rat this guy is, as far as going deep into checking out everything possible about all players. Milner, you know, a very good bullpen guy, but, you know, kind of obscured in Chicago when he came here. You know, Bregman just shocked him by telling him, "Here are two tips that you were giving away to us when we hit you." And then, you know, Milner went into talking about how he really hit a ball really hard off of him during that time.
And Bruce, hearing Jed Hoyer describe how Alex Bregman came into the office and asked, "Okay, there are some young players on this team. What are points of emphasis for each of these guys?" Because he wanted to be part of their improvement or part of reinforcing whatever their weakness was and trying to make it a strength. And I just feel like when you got Alex Bregman, you're right. I'm not sure you could have anticipated. You're paying all of that money for his production, the defense at third base, the slug in your order. But the intangibles, I suppose that comes with the cost of him, of his contract, but it's not something you expect. And it's not something you often see from guys who have reached his status in the league. And so that is refreshing. And already you're starting to see that kind of investment pay some dividends.
8 years in Major League Baseball, 8 trips to the playoffs. Okay.
That's a winner.
It's a big W, right? He might as well wear that W flag on him every day when he walks in. But the reality is, David, all this stuff is terrific, important, but the most important thing is for him to play 145 games, right? That's going to be the key for the Cubs. They get 145 healthy games out of Bregman, you know he's going to help you win.
He takes Matt Shaw's place at third base. Matt Shaw is, I saw video and you were there taking fly balls in right field, working on his path to fly balls and what's getting comfortable in the outfield after being a lifelong infielder. What have been your impressions early of Matt Shaw, the outfielder?
You know, I mean, you know, hitting him fly balls, it's too early to tell. You know, one thing that they're relying on, and Council expanded on this a little yesterday, is that Shaw is a really good baseball athlete. And there was, and he pointed out, he said, "Remember last spring?" And I said, "Yeah." And other media people shook their head. He goes, "Everyone was doubting that Matt Shaw could play third base because he had really not played there in his amateur and early professional career. He was a second baseman and a shortstop. And he looked extraordinarily raw to begin the year and begin the spring training. And by the end of spring training and into the season, that was the least thing that anybody worried about. Yeah, once in a while the throw was 2 bounces, but it was accurate. He just made spectacular plays, ended up being a Gold Glove finalist as a rookie, even after going down to the minor leagues and coming back. So they believe in him as a baseball player. That's why he's getting the tag super utility guy this spring. Will it work out? Will it impact his hitting? Only time will tell on that.
That's what spring training is for, to try to work out the kinks, get comfortable in a new role, and make sure that it's not going to be a problem, as you don't want to take those issues to the plate with you if you are getting the kind of a number of at-bats you think that Matt Shaw could get for the Cubs. Along those lines, let's take a phone call. People weighing in, 312-644-6767. James is in Park Forest, Bruce. He's got a thought about Matt Shaw.
Good morning. Yes, exactly. This kid showed me that he could not hit major league pitching last year. We filled that void, and now we're going to make him an important part of the outfield. Why not Alcantara, the other, I think that's how you say his name, the other young kid. Yep. He can hit better than Shaw. This season is too important to take a chance on someone who's not an outfielder and who has a hole in his bat. I just cannot see Hoyer. Wake up. Didn't Nick Castellano show that he can still hit? Anyone that's better than Shaw, I think, is a hitter. It's too important a year to take a chance on someone who has a hole in his bat. It just doesn't make sense to me.
James, thanks for the phone call. Nick Castellanos, to update our listeners, just signed this morning with the San Diego Padres, according to John Heyman. I don't know if the Cubs were interested or not, Bruce. What do you think about that Alcantara thought from James, and as well as the concerns about Matt Shaw?
I think James is on target, okay? I have concerns. You know, they all say, Cubs people, that Shaw proved in the second half he can hit. I'm not one of those guys that is convinced that he's proved he's going to consistently hit major league pitching. I'm not there yet. I saw a lot of swing and miss toward the end of the last year. I think James' evaluation is astute because of the fact that Alcantara is the best outfielder on the – maybe in the Cubs organization this side of Pete Crow Armstrong. So the fact that they think there's a maturity issue still as far as Alcantara being a big league player internally, that's one of the things that might hold him back. Again, I think Shaw – because – there's always an internal prejudice for teams with a number one pick, David. Mm-hmm. Okay. And
every sport.
Yeah. Yeah. And they want to prove that they're right. Okay. They want to prove that this guy's good. And I think he will be good, but I don't think he's there yet. So what James picked up is really fair. It's on the spot as far as I'm concerned. And he's going to have to prove to me that he can hit big league pitching and that he's, more importantly, make more contacts.
Bruce, Nick Castellanos was a former Cub. To your knowledge, did the Cubs even explore that possibility? He was let go by the Phillies. And at this stage of his career, not a great defensive outfielder.
Can't run, can't defend. They already have DH and Seau when he's not playing right field. They have Ballesteros, who, by the way, is not in camp yet because of visa issues. I always tell them to use the MasterCard instead, but nonetheless, the visa issue is there for him. And it's not funny because it's Venezuela that he's trying to get back from right now. We know all the political situations going on there. But, the reality is I don't think that Castellanos fit in those type of plans. Not a defender. Seiya is going to start in right field, be the right fielder most of the time, according to them. But I just don't think there was enough at-bats to sign him.
Dylan Carlson also signed to be that fourth outfielder if he can have a good spring and recapture some of the what worked before his career kind of went a different
Chaz
direction.
Chaz McCormick, too.
Chaz McCormick, don't forget about him. Yeah. These are the veterans that were brought to Arizona to try to fill in that gap. Bruce, we've got a lot ahead of us on this show. 9:30, we're going to come back and talk to Jonathan Cannon from the White Sox, who is a right-hander trying to make a bid for the rotation on the south side. And then at 10 o'clock, Justin Steele will join us from Arizona as he continues his recovery from the injury that kept him out of last season. A lot more on the way. 312-644-6767. Call or text. Let us know what you think. The Cubs and Sox spring training. Hope springs eternal on this Valentine's Day. We'll come back. It's David. It's Bruce. We're here until 11 o'clock talking Chicago baseball on 104.3.
Hello, it's Lena Dunham. I host a podcast called The C Word with my dearest friend and historian of bad behavior, Alyssa Bennett.
What is up?
It's a chat show about women who society has called crazy.
We're going to be rediscovering the stories of women society dismissed by calling them mad, sad, or just plain bad.
Listen to and follow The C Word with Lena Dunham and Alyssa Bennett. Available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Score.
0-2. Got him swinging. Yeah.
Changeup down and away once again, man. He is absolutely rolling with that changeup.
Swing and a miss. Jonathan Cannon's got that good stuff working.
Welcome back inside the clubhouse. Chicago Sports Radio 104.3 The Score. David Hall, Bruce Levine here until 11 o'clock talking baseball like we do every Saturday morning. It's time now to go out to our Circa Resort and Casino Hotline. CircaLasVegas.com is where we find the fine White Sox young right-hander. Jonathan Cannon joins us. Good morning, Jonathan. How are you?
Doing good. How are y'all?
We're doing great here in Chicago. Bruce is in Arizona. We really appreciate your time this morning. Let's just start. What is your point of emphasis this spring coming into your second season, a little more acclimated? What are the kinds of things you're looking forward to working on, and how is it going so far?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I feel like second half of last season didn't really go according to how I would have liked it to go, and so went into this off season really with just kind of the focus of, you know, just like a good mental reset, just kind of stepping away from the game for a month and just really kind of just going through that hard mental reset, which I mean definitely happens from time to time, just a little bit of burnout, a little bit of everything, trying to fix a lot of things during the season, and kind of went into the off season a little bit reinvigorated and really just kind of hone in on stuff I felt like I needed to work on towards the end of last year. I thought I needed to improve my sinker, and that was kind of the main focus this off season. And so really just throwing bullpens, facing hitters, and just making sure I'm in a really good spot from a health standpoint and from a pitching standpoint coming out to spring training. I feel like I'm in a really good spot, so I'm excited for camp and the season as well.
Jonathan, young people like yourself, who so much was expected from, do you get caught up in the idea that the front office and fan base and media said, well, you're the young ace of the staff, and you know you should be good to go to throw 160, 170 innings, and you know it's all good from there? How does that non-linear knowledge of knowing that you don't know exactly what a year is going to be like each year impact a young pitcher like yourself?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you go into every season with, I think everyone's goal is to, number one, make every start, not have to spend time on the IL or deal with injuries. But, I mean, as you know, it's part of it. I dealt with my back last June. And so you really just kind of have to take it one start at a time, and not look too far ahead. And that's kind of really, really the focus for me, especially like this is now going to be my third big league season, parts of three big league seasons. And so at this point, I'm looking start to start. Like, I'm not looking too far ahead or whatever it is, or not looking ahead to July or the All-Star break yet. Like, right now, the only thing I'm thinking about is my next live at bat and what can I improve between what I did yesterday and my next live at bat. And that's really kind of how I approach the season now. I mean, there's always going to be expectations from other people, expectations from fans, from the team, from the front office, from myself. And at the end of the day, like, it's too much out of my control and too many things to worry about outside of just, hey, I'm just going to execute this pitch right here. And for me, it's just always kind of one pitch at a time.
How have those expectations changed? You said this is your third spring, and I can remember a couple of springs ago when it was your first, they're very high. And last year, maybe tempered slightly. Now this year, you are considered still young, still very young, but you know the way around. You are probably having other people look at you for answers. And I just wonder how that changes your mindset and approach, if it does change it at all.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it's a little bit of the maturity. I was having a conversation with one of the guys the other day about how just your approach to camp changes as you kind of participate in more. My first spring training, it was my first big league camp. You know, you're just kind of a little bit in awe. Like when you haven't made your debut yet, you're like, wow, this is really cool. Like, I'm close. Like, all this. Like, making the team was obviously something that I was excited to try and do, but I knew that the expectation really wasn't that I was going to make the team out of camp. So there really wasn't a ton of pressure or anything. I was kind of just soaking it all in. And now it's, and last year I felt like I wanted to like go really hard, really early, like boom, like I want to show everyone like, hey, like I'm ready, like I'm good, all this. And now, like for me, it's spring training is all about preparation and just preparation, prepping your body, prepping your pitches, prepping everything for the season. There's a reason we get a month and a half of playing games in Arizona before we go start the season. It's to work on stuff. It's to get your body in a good spot to take on 30 starts, 180 plus innings. And that's really my goal now, is to prepare myself. Obviously, I know that performance matters for me this spring, but performance always matters. And at the end of the day, it's thinking about it anymore isn't gonna help it. It's, you just got to take it one day at a time, one pitch at a time, and really just put yourself in the best position possible come opening day.
Jonathan Cannon with us for a few more minutes here on Inside the Clubhouse. Jonathan, you have a new pitching coach. What is that dynamic like? What have you and Zach been talking about working together, getting to know each other this spring?
Yeah, I mean, I talked to Bove a couple of times when he first got hired, and we were kind of in contact throughout the off season. And we one of our first calls, we got on a call for about 2 hours, and just kind of broke down the season, broke down what I feel like I'm like at my best, what he has seen, what he's seen from across the diamond, being with the Royals. And so I really think it's a little bit about improving the stuff that I have, and also getting back to a little bit of the aggressive strike throwing pitcher that has always been my identity since the day I was drafted until my rookie season. And even last year, I felt like I got away from that a little bit in the second half, started throwing some balls, started falling behind, putting myself in tough situations, running up my pitch count early in the game. And so really just kind of getting back to that guy that just pounds the zone, looking for early contact, looking for strikeouts, looking for just positive outcomes early on by just really pounding the zone. And that's kind of just a very simple answer, but that's really kind of the simple focus of this spring, just getting back to really attacking the zone and putting guys on the defense.
Jonathan, you look around at your fellow pitchers, and the youth is obvious, and so is the potential. Grant Taylor, Shane Smith, Sean Burke, and then you got guys who aren't here yet with Hagen Smith and Noah Schultz. And I wonder, when you see as many guys who you can relate to, what they're going through, and as much as you have dealt with your own expectations that we discussed, how competitive does it become? Because you want to be that guy that maybe is the best of the bunch, because it's quite a good bunch. And I just wonder how that competition translates into possible increased focus, intensity, and ultimately, ideally, results.
No doubt. I mean, it's at the end of the day, we're all in professional baseball. We all are here because we're extremely competitive, and we've overcome long odds to get to where we are now. And really, when it comes down to it, you bond as a group. And really, with us, I feel like we have a very, very tight knit group. I think, as some of the fans saw, you guys saw, like, we hung out this off season. We keep in touch. We're all really good friends. And at the end of the day, we all want to succeed together. And you don't get anywhere by rooting against someone that you're in competition with, especially on your team. Like, I want to see all those guys do really well. Like, I'm super, super happy for all of them whenever they shove, whenever they have a good start. And the competition is sort of just, you know, like, kind of outdoing one another. Like, one guy goes six innings, hey, like, you try and go seven or whatever it may be. But once again, trying to just go one outing at a time, and you want to do it together. And so we all wish nothing but the best for each other, and we want us to go out and just shove as a group every single time. There's nothing better than playing a 3 or 4 game series, and we just go out, and as a staff, we just give up like a total of like three or four runs the whole series. And there's nothing better than just shoving as a staff. And that's kind of just what our goals are every series, is to just put some good starts together, relievers put some good outings together, and leverage spots and go win a series every single week.
Have to ask you your early impressions of Munae Murakami. Everybody seems to be watching a lot of batting practice, every swing that he takes. You don't know how far he's going to hit it. What have been your early impressions of Munae as a teammate?
Yeah, Munae has been great. I've got to talk to him a couple times, and he just seems like a super, super great guy, super nice guy. Super laid back, but works extremely hard. I've got a chance to see his routine kind of up close, and you kind of see why he's had the success that he's had. He's really in tune with his body and what's going on and the recovery, and it's been cool to watch. And so I'm super excited to see him take the field for us in spring training and then during the year. I think he's been a great addition up to this point. I can't wait to see the results speak for themselves on the field, because we've all seen what he's capable of doing over in Japan and in the WBC. We'll get to see him again. So I'm very excited to watch him play.
Jonathan, David, and I appreciate your time today, but I have one more question for you, and that is the three catcher dynamic. You have three outstanding young catchers, you know, with Lee, Quero, and of course, Teal. Is it your game that they adhere to, and do they do it all the same way, or do you also have to adjust to three different good catchers who are all major league caliber?
Yeah, I mean, I think all three of them bring a little different dynamic to the table, especially like when they're behind the plate, and all in a good way. I mean, I really enjoy throwing to all three of them. I think we're very spoiled over here to have three elite catchers like we do, and not many teams can say that. And so to have those guys has been great. And just I've been throwing to Caro since he first got traded over to us in Double A, and then obviously threw to Corey most of 2024, and then Teal last year in 25. And so just to watch them grow, especially as young guys, especially Caro and Teal, just to see them kind of, Corey especially, to take both of them under his wing and just kind of give them some guidance and little kind of nuances of the game and pitch calling and situational things, just to see how much they've matured in the last couple of years has been really fun to watch. And it's been awesome for us on the mound just to watch them get better from week to week, start to start. And I think that adjustment level between catchers is smaller and smaller because we're all kind of on the same page now. They know what my strengths are. They know what I look like when I'm at my best. And they're able to kind of help guide me and keep me kind of in that rhythm as the game is going. And if I get out of that rhythm, they're able to kind of get me back into that rhythm as quick as possible. So we're very spoiled over here to have the caliber of catchers that we do have. And once again, just very excited to watch them continue to get better this year.
Jonathan, thank you so much for your time. Best of luck this season. Look forward to talking to you again.
Yep, thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
Jonathan Cannon, White Sox young right-hander out in Arizona, in Glendale, getting ready for a big season. Bruce, when we come back, we'll talk about that Sox rotation a little bit and the Munae effect on spring training. It's David Haw, Bruce Levine, inside the clubhouse right here at Chicago Sports Radio, 104.3 The Score.
Hey friends, I'm Sharon McMahon, host of The Preamble. Listen, I know you're dealing with a lot, and it's even harder to do it when the world around you feels chaotic. But I'm here to help. Each week, my expert guests and I slow things down to talk about the stories shaping our world, what's really happening behind the headlines, why it matters, how it all connects. And if you're ready for real understanding and maybe even a little bit of hope, follow and listen to The Preamble wherever you get your podcasts.
Score.
It was kind of a quiet free agency for a while there, and then right as it got close to spring training, kind of heated up and had a few offers, but White Sox made the best one in a place where felt very comfortable and knew some faces and had some success, so felt like a great place to come, start back up again.
Welcome back inside the clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio 104.3 The Score. That was Eric Fetty talking about choosing the White Sox. He signed a one-year, $1.5 million deal this week to join the rotation, Bruce, dare I say? Is he somebody that you envision being one of the starting five to open the season, or how do you see Eric Fetty fitting in? We just talked to Jonathan Cannon. We know his expectations. In year three, they're high. Where does Eric Fetty fit into the mix?
Well, he might be 1-5 or 1-6 to start the season, David. We don't know, you know, innings wise. You know, these days coming out of spring training, how much, you know, you can expect from starting pitchers. They don't wind them up like they used to, getting right. them up to 100 pitches and expecting them to go 6 innings, 7 innings. That's not baseball 2026. So with that in mind, you know, Fetty might be either a long man or he might be in that rotation to give them a little bit of an extra time off at the beginning of the season. That might be the way they go, but it's good bringing in a veteran. He had a lousy year last year. He got beat up horribly. So coming back to the White Sox and getting back with Bannister, who he's very close with, you know, the director of pitching, I think that's a feel good for him, and they felt that there's something left in the tank with Fetty.
Okay, let's do the baseball math then. You got Fetty, you've got Sean Burke, you've got Shane Smith, you've got Jonathan Cannon. Anthony Kay was brought here to start. Davis Martin, that's six. That's a six you reference. Down in the minors on the way, you've got Noah Schultz, who we saw this week, Hagen Smith, maybe Tanner McDougal. Also in the mix, you traded for Jordan Hicks, who brings that fastball. He's been stretched out, it sounds like. Mike Vassell has talked about wanting to make some noise and get into that rotation. Bruce, do the White Sox have a surplus of quality arms or question marks?
A little of both, I think. There's some quality in there. But, you know, again, I can't emphasize this enough. The White Sox had the fewest starting innings by any pitching staff in baseball last year. That is something to really think about, considering we're in a pattern right now where there aren't as many innings pitched by starting pitchers. The White Sox had the least. So there's nobody proven there that's automatic 30-start, 180-inning guy on the team. They just don't have it. So you have to have an awful lot of depth. You have to prepare for what you're not expecting, which is injury as well as people not being up to the task of getting enough outs.
And you want
so
to
go ahead.
The bridge that you want to build is to the seventh, eighth, and ninth inning, certainly, because you feel better this year about your bullpen because of Sir Anthony Dominguez, because of Grant Taylor, because of Jordan Leisure. And those three guys make you feel better that if you can get a one-run lead this year, that you're going to protect it instead of blowing it like you did 24 times last year. The strength of the bullpen, Bruce, might be the best part about this team. Is that overstating it so far?
A little bit, because it's on paper right now. So, you know, Taylor, certainly you pointed out that they've added quality depth, you know, from the past. You know, Dominguez should be a huge upgrade at the end. You know, Grant Taylor showed that he can dominate at many times like he did last year. He's going to be kind of a hybrid middle reliever toward the end of the game, used for more than one inning type guy. Leisure not having to go out there as many times as he had to last year. He just got abused after a while. He's got a really good arm. He should be a good ball player for him. So I think they did on paper certainly answer some questions there, because, you know, losing one run games, it became a joke with the White Sox last year. They were in a lot of ball games that they couldn't win.
I loved your question to Jonathan Cannon about all three of the catchers that he will be throwing to this spring: Kyle Teal, Edgar Caro, and Corey Lee. Corey Lee may be the odd man out, but in Lee, Caro, and Teal, how do they make Sox pitchers better? Or do you view them as maybe just not plus, not minus? They're just receivers, because you see often in baseball a good catcher can improve young pitching because of the way they call games or just because of the way they handle the staff.
The most inexperienced guy was Teal. Okay, he had a long way to go, and I think he did come a long way with the coaching staff that was there last year and with Carroll around. They were good teammates to each other. You know, I think Cannon mentioned to us, David, the fact that, you know, there's sometimes a jealousy that you're better than the other guy. You want to catch all the games. Major League Baseball these days, nobody catches all the games. You know, the most anybody catches is 120, maybe 125. So there's plenty of games. There's plenty of situations where you need that second catcher. Very few have the quality of what we think of with Carroll and with Teal, two guys that most people feel are number one. I'm a big Corey Lee fan. I think he's an outstanding catcher. I don't think he's gotten the respect that he deserves along the way. So they're in a good position there. And I think the selflessness among the catchers is the important thing about sharing the position, learning together. Cannon mentioned about how Lee shared his professional knowledge with the other two guys, having been around a while longer, but he's still a very young catcher.
He's Bruce Levine. He's in Arizona. I'm David Haw here in Chicago. This is Inside the Clubhouse on Chicago Sports Radio 104.3 The Score. When we come back, Justin Steele, the Cubs left-hander, on his way back to the mound for the Cubs. We'll have it all here, right here on Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio 104.3 The Score.
You know your customers. Ralph likes his coffee black on Fridays, but Mondays he takes a little cream. Jennifer comes in every 3 years when her lease is up to get the newer and better model. And for some reason, pepperoni pizza sells like crazy on Friday nights. Who knew? At Odyssey, we have the expertise to get your media plan done right. With ads like you're hearing right now, to targeted social media campaigns, search engine optimization, and location-based advertising. Advertise with Odyssey and help us grow your business. Visit ads.odyssey.com.